Oh no.
Okay. I really have one question to ask. It has to do with Now Wait for Last Year by Philip K. Dick. A lot of this story was about drugs and about this specific drug. If there was a drug available that would let you actually be in the future or a future, but the drug will eventually kill you. It wouldn't take years, less than years, to be in some kind of future for you. Would you take the drug? It's a yes or no question.
No.
I'm a no on that too.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you like to see the future?
Am I taking this drug at my current age, or am I near deathbed? Hey, let me get a quick glimpse before I go. There's an argument to be said, like, if you could pinpoint the moment, could you somehow pinpoint the moment that you realized what would be the cause of your death and therefore you could prevent it? Then that would be interesting.
Oh, wait, the drug is probably the cause of your death because you took the drug to see the future. Is there a little loop there?
Except, and this is where we start to wonder if Philip K. Dick is just a madman or not, but that's what happens here, right? Because he goes to this future where he can then get a cure, knowing there would be 10 years down the road. There's definitely a cure by then. So he's able to get a cure, right?
Yes. Okay. So you have three wishes, and my third wish is for more wishes.
Oh, yeah, that's against the rules. Yeah, he can't. Yeah, the genie says no. Yeah. Who's making the rules for the genie? Yeah.
That's true. And you said that Philip K. Dick might be a madman. How many of his novels have we read? Two now, or?
Yeah, Martian Time Slip. I think somewhere in between, I'd read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which...
Okay, more expert than me then. Madman or not?
Or mad genius? I don't know if I've read enough to have that strong of an opinion, but this is a pretty wild novel, and Martian Time Slip was pretty wild too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right in the middle of this one, I was thinking, wow, this is crazy, just like the other one. Now I get it. If I keep reading Philip K. Dick, I might understand it more or less. I don't know. But it's dark stuff.
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? So that's the novel that Blade Runner is based on.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes.
So it's made into a movie. And yeah. I feel like that one's not as wild or, let's say, trippy, kind of schizophrenic. I feel Blade Runner, in terms of a plot line and a story, it flows and resolves in a way that all works more or less.
Are you trying to say normal?
Yeah, it's a little more digestible in terms of this standard story that we get. Maybe a hero's journey-ish sort of story.
Yep, I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, and this one doesn't really do that for me, and Martian Time Slip didn't really do that for me. It just doesn't flow smoothly in that way. I don't know. I guess I've got some struggling here because I don't want to come off as being so critical, but... I think it struck me that I had such a hard time finding this book in the usual places. Like, it's not a popular one. And we look at Philip K. Dick has so many popular stories that have been turned into movies.
Movies, yeah.
And this one, I would argue, wouldn't lend itself very well to a movie.
I see parts and pieces. Philip K. Dick is just great at describing things. Sometimes I feel while reading his book, I'm standing there watching an accident happen, like maybe two cars or two vehicles that are absolutely going to come together and you just don't know what to do about it. And then it's crash time. And then you just keep looking at it and it's, whoa, that's dark. Is this where we introduce life, death, sci-fi?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we could go back. and do that.
Is it like going back in time to do that?
Yeah, after you edit it and put it back in the beginning. Yeah, you're the puppeteer there. I'm here with a man who would create a wonderful recreation of a nostalgic yet authentic recreation of his childhood on Mars, to which we could travel and explore. What would that be? I'm saying I can't remember your, I feel like I should know this because you're Michigan, right?
Yes.
But what was it? It's not Flint. What's your, or can you, you want to say your home?
Michigan State University, East Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah, what's
the Spartans?
No, it's the hometown.
East Lansing, Michigan.
Lansing, that's right, Lansing, shoot.
Lansing.
So our guy there, Virgil Ackerman, seems to live
finally
forever.
Finally, I get it.
130 years later, he's 130 or something. He just keeps having new body parts installed. And
oh, yeah.
And he creates this. So a man who would not take JJ-180, this time-traveling drug that we are finally introduced to after many pages. We get to it. Eric, how you doing?
Would I recreate East Lansing, Michigan in the time that I was young?
I'll set this up a little bit better. So we start off, we're in the year, and we're discussing Philip K. Dick's novel, Now Wait for Last Year, published in 1966, probably in the midst of or not long after one of his many divorces. Maybe we'll come back to that when we talk about whether or not this is a love story or whatever's going on there. But we're in 2055. We're in a future, since we're recording this in January 9th of 2024. Happy New Year. And 2055, and there's a galactic war happening, as that we find out, amongst three different groups, two aliens and some Terran, and we Terrans or Earthlings. And in the beginning, we meet our protagonist, Dr. Eric Sweet Scent, and he is the personal physician of a very wealthy man, wealthiest man in the world, it seems, Virgil Ackerman. And they're on their way to Mars to have a meeting of some kind that's happening in this world. It sounds like there's a number of wealthy people, those that can afford it, have created these simulations of whatever they want. But in this case, Ackerman has created a simulation of his childhood, and he's from DC. And so he calls this place, it's WASH, WASH 33, which must be this key year of his childhood. So WASH 33. And it's this Disneyland type, it's not amusement park, but it's a place that people can visit and explore his childhood.
I didn't get that he was taking visitors. I thought this was just his little private getaway. And in fact, I didn't even feel that very many people knew about it, because that was skipped to the end. There will be spoilers. That was where he hid out during the Galactic War.
Which
didn't seem like, you know, if you're in a galactic war or intergalactic war, that they wouldn't check out something Mars. Like that. They wouldn't know about it.
They probably know what's happening on Mars. Yeah, that's a good point. I think it is somebody else who he gives access to because of some, can't remember, there's some deal or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a corrupt deal where it's, okay, I'll give you access to this place. And yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe the wrong analogy. I guess I visualize it like an empty Disneyland or something. I visualize it like some abandoned town on a Bradbury Mars where it's this weird
in a bubble
creation of some Earth town, or it's a wonderful life without any people.
Yeah. in the Martian Chronicles, there was a team of astronauts that went in and visited their childhood home on Mars, I think through hallucinations, and then were captured.
Right. Yeah, Twilight Zone. Yeah.
I wonder when those two novels were written. Were Ray Bradbury's written before one? I think it was. Yeah. So he probably read this, and that could have been an idea for Philip K. Dick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got to the rich billionaire part, but that's really still in the beginning of the novel, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've read this on a number of different devices, and so I think all the page numbers are a bit clear to me. But it seemed that was about a fourth of the way through the book by the time we're introduced to this other key, I guess, plot device, which is this drug JJ-180. But maybe we should put a pin in that for a second and just come back to that question I was trying to stall for. Would you, if you were this billionaire, if you're Elon Musk, old Elon Musk, who's had 14 livers and is 130, would you create a nostalgic vision of your childhood? Would you create a land, I won't put a year on it for you, a land 75, let's say a land 75. Yeah.
Oh, honestly, yeah. I think about my childhood often enough, and it wasn't really the best part of my life so far. I've had other eras, other times in my life where it was really a lot nicer. And it was, I think my childhood was more of a struggle. I think if you feel that way, you don't want to go back and rebuild that, do you? Unless, I can change it or something. Nah, I don't think so. So I'm assuming that the super rich guy.
Oh, Virgil Ackerman, yeah.
Virgil Ackerman probably had a great childhood, and that's why he wants to be in it. So that kind of begs the question, if you're that rich, then you would go back in your life and maybe it wouldn't be your childhood, or maybe it'd be your 20s, 30s, or 30s, 40s.
Right.
You could rebuild that era. But to go back and rebuild it, it's like those historical parks. There's one in Michigan, and it's just full of what it would be like to live in Michigan 200 years ago. And every time I go to one of those kinds of things, it's just a little bit creepy, I think.
Yeah, to me, yeah, I'm with you. And there was like almost a Citizen Kane, Rosebud quality to it. If you're that old and still so focused on your childhood and maybe something you lost there, you're searching for this thing from your childhood, so you want to recreate it.
That seems like a troubled person to me.
I found myself with so many parts to this book just wondering why it was there. So when I look at this whole beginning, there's so much here about this Wash 33, right? That seems to be significant for a while, or Virgil Ackerman seems to be significant. And in the end, it's like, okay, so what? Why was this guy creating something from the past? So focused on his past, okay, does that sort of lead into a time travel? And I'm trying to think through it. So eventually this Kathy, we haven't talked about yet. So she's the wife of
Sweet Scent.
Yeah, Eric Sweet Scent. Kathy Sweetscent, she is the first to take this drug, JJ-180, and she goes back in time when she takes it, and she sends a message to young Virgil Ackerman, and I guess we could say that he receives that message, and does he become so successful because he's received that, right? Possibly.
Okay. And that's part of the time travel idea.
She knows
here.
Where to send it because she knows he was from Washington. She's the one who is collecting all the antiques for him. She specializes in that.
She gets what she wants, and he got something in return.
So that's a reason, but is there some greater reason for that place? I don't...
For me, this is a book about drugs and the effects of drugs. And I thought, oh, cool, it's a time travel drug. And that's new for us, what we've been reading about. That's a new vehicle for time travel. A lot of times it's a door. You walk through the door, you're in a place. But this was a drug. I'm happily reading along. And then the side effects of this drug are thunder clouds that ripple through the rest of the book. This book is really glued together with this awful drug that really wasn't made for time travel, but
okay.
That's one of the side effects.
Yeah, it's a sort of side effect. And it wasn't clear to me. This is another kind of frustration or maybe just something to explore. I found myself wondering, okay, so you've made this drug, and they're referred to as Terrans throughout. So the Earthlings were in this intergalactic war and losing, and we've created a drug that we're going to distribute and try to addict this alien population to so that we can win the war, right?
Okay. I think I got it a different way. What were they called? The Lilistar Starmen. I thought they created the drug.
That's what they said initially. They tell Kathy that because they're trying to trick her into being a spy for them. And that's when she's supposed to go to Cheyenne to meet up with her husband. And they say they'll feed her more of this drug that she's addicted to if she'll go there. When she's arriving, or she's being taken by someone else from the company, she's being taken to Cheyenne, she discovers that actually that company that Ackerman owns as a subsidiary that's manufacturing the drug, it's actually made on Earth.
Yes, made on Earth, but I think it's created by the Lilistar Starmen. I'm not sure about that now. You have made me...
No, I'm questioning it.
Not
too.
As confident. But it really doesn't matter. The drug was...
Either way, why would you use a drug that whether its purpose is to cause time travel? There's death there, right? So the people are going to die. I get the addiction and death part if you're trying to destroy a population. But if one of the side effects or any effect is time travel, it just seems super risky to be causing a whole population of people to be time traveling and messing with timelines. And what a potentially disastrous and unbelievably risky way to try to win an intergalactic war. It makes no sense at all.
Right. But when Eric Sweetsen went back maybe second time to visit this pharmaceutical company that was making the drug, he went into the future to try to get the
antidote.
Antidote. When he was talking to the people, they said, oh, yeah, we got rid of the time travel thing, and now it's just a killer drug. Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
So they're still developing this super addictive, death-giving drug and getting rid of the parts that they don't like, like any pharmaceutical company does.
Or at least they are in that parallel world.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Because yeah. We get to a point, as we have in so many of these time travel stories, where it's gotten to a point where it's like we're in so many parallel worlds, we're in the multiverse, and it becomes so entangled in a way that it's just messy.
Yes. When we first decided to do time travel stories, I was all excited about this. Oh, I'm so excited about doing time travel stories. And now after reading and looking through many time travel stories, I'm not as excited as I used to be. Because of what you just said, it's very messy, sometimes really hard to believe. And then that kind of gets to the point, what is it about time travel that is so wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's question or why. Yeah, I've always been fascinated by it too. I think I enjoy the mental exercise of trying to follow it, but then I get to a point where I'm like, yeah, and then I okay, that's just as far as I can take it. And I leave it there, which I feel like Philip K. Dick has done here, where it feels like we're reading a book that was not revised a whole lot, right? Sat down, he worked through some ideas, and then, okay, here it is. Like, I'm not trying to go back and polish it in some way that it all seamlessly works together.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now it begs the question, what's one thing in this novel that you would buff up a little bit, polish, explain more, give a solution to, develop more? For me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
For me, it would be the relationship between the Lily Starmen, who seem to me a little Nazi-esque.
Right.
In this book, they looked down on the humans, made fun of them, were willing to just treat them like dirt. The relationship with them and the Regs, the insect kind of race that Starmen were fighting against.
Right.
And Earth got in the way. And Earth aligned with the Starmen, I think, because they looked more like humans, right? Less like insects. Mm. But the insects turned out to be, spoiler alert, as in all Life Death Sci-Fi episodes,
yeah,
we have.
There will be spoilers.
The insects were the good guys.
In one universe they were.
Oh, okay. You're getting back to the universes now, huh? I have to choose my universe. And by the way, as we're talking right now, living our lives, are we choosing our universe each day, each moment? How does that work?
Time travel inevitably raises questions about like self-determination or
free will.
Yeah, free will versus fate and what control we have.
We were talking about free will versus a deterministic outlook. In that place, free will versus everything's determined, where do you stand?
I don't know.
That is a great answer.
No, I can't, because I don't know that the answer is clear. And this is like without coming off like a crazy person, but I have a hard time explaining this. But when I listen to someone like, and we could try to put this in the show notes somewhere, there's like full episodes that Sam Harris has done, where I may have mentioned him before. He's got a podcast and all this stuff. And he has some episodes where he discusses how we don't have free will. His example that he always gives is, okay, if I ask you to think of a movie, right? Okay, well, I'll do it right now. I'll say, okay, don't say it out loud, but you can think of a movie. All right.
Pick a card, any card. Okay.
Think of a movie. And his argument is, okay, so you've got your movie. You can say if you want, what's the movie?
Space Odyssey. This is sci-fi. That's sci-fi. Okay. So it's Space Odyssey.
So were you able to choose what that was?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of movies. It fit best with what we were talking about, I thought.
But you didn't get to come up with that. It's not like you were able to create that list in your own head. Somewhere it emerged. And then you recognized it and grabbed it. But
okay,
you didn't get to choose your list of movies. You don't know what happened in your mind before that sort of list or that movie came to mind. Something else made that happen.
Okay. Your question made that happen.
Yeah, but see, I've not explained it very well.
I get it.
But I asked that question, but why did that movie come to mind and not, let's say, I Am Legend or something?
Okay. Yeah.
That's a good one. But that's sure. It's a sci-fi movie. We're having a sci-fi podcast, but why that particular sci-fi movie?
I changed my mind. I'm going with I Am Legend now.
But my point being, like, whatever happens before we get that in our mind, there's something going on there that implies we don't have full kind of control. We don't even have full control over our own thoughts or impulses.
I have read stuff about this. So I know what you're talking about. And that is the argument for deterministic kinds of philosophies.
He's an atheist, right? So it's for him. Then the question becomes, if not us, then who or what? And that's where, I don't know, is it the Matrix? I mean, that seems to always come up. That's why some people would argue it's like hard to prove that we're not possibly in a matrix or some kind of thing like that. Or is it a God pulling all the strings, or what's happening there that is sort of out of our control? But anyway, so I don't know. You're asking me that. I don't know the answer to that. I feel like I struggle.
So what's the argument? What's the argument for free will then? Yes, there's that moment of determinism that, okay, this is how you're going to go. But in free will, it's, I can do this or I can do that. Or I'm going to go this way or that way.
Because we do have some control, right? I can decide to turn off my mic. I can decide to pick up this pen. We're deciding to have this conversation, I think.
So every time that you make a new decision like that, is it, do we split off or do you split off into a universe that picks up their pens? The other universe does not.
Yeah, I think every time, I think that seems to make sense to me. Every time we make a choice, a whole bunch of branches then spread out as possibilities based on that choice. And then the possibilities behind us are cut off, and each choice creates a whole bunch of other branches.
Okay, so you were just talking about branches before and branches after. How long does that moment last where we are in the present before we branch off into the future or drag our past with us? How long do you think that present moment lasts?
I don't know. Maybe it depends on one's ability to focus. So for me, not very long. No. There's probably some kind of drug I could take to help me. Yeah.
No. Meditation and the yogis who can almost stop their heart. It seems like they can almost stop time. That's a form of time travel there, because they're living in that moment.
So meditation. Yeah, Sam Harris has his own app for that. It's pretty interesting, and he's into that. He's a neurologist, and I guess that's maybe to kind of come back to Now Wait for Last Year. Philip K. Dick.
Oh, the story?
Yeah, he is choosing. It's a drug, but it is through the mind. And so he is exploring.
Yes. Hallucinations.
Seems to be no one else is experiencing it, except the robot cab drivers now and again in their confused way. It's also hard. Right. Can that even make sense? But yeah, these are hallucinatory experiences that are absolutely real to the person, but no one else around them, right? They're cast out and then they come to, and it's only been a few seconds for everybody around them, but they've had this experience that was very real for them. He brings back, when he goes to the future, he brings back these monetary notes, these alternative.
Wait a minute. Are you sure? I didn't think they could bring back anything. Because they wrote down the formula and they said, no, that's not going to work. You got to memorize the formula.
But when he goes back at the end, he goes to pay for something. He goes to pay for that drug, that suicide drug in Tijuana. And he goes to pay with those notes that he brought back, and they call it like funny money. And she threatens to call the police on him, and he just leaves them there.
Yeah.
Well, this is another weird loophole with the book.
Oh, okay. So you bring stuff with you. You can bring stuff with you, but you can't take it back. Huh?
He brings it. He must bring it back because he's in the past. So he's...
Okay. So if you bring your wallet with you, you bring your wallet back with you, but you can't go to the future and then get something
and take it back. No, but he brought back notes. So he could bring something back later. That's a bit of a... plot hole.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of those polish up moments.
Yeah.
I did like the interaction between the Sweetwater and the taxi driver. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
The robot Robont.
Robont. They kind of coins that term.
Yeah.
All right. So you said, we're talking about like what you might polish. Now, you are a fan of space opera.
Yes.
That's a theme we could explore.
I'm a Trekkie. You're Star Wars. Okay.
I can go either way there. I like both.
So do I.
Yeah.
Okay. Space operas.
Yeah, but I know you especially, I think, enjoy that. It sounds like you wanted more of that kind of backgrounding and kind of a rounding out or an understanding of those other groups and things. He's not finding some clever way to give us all this backstory and understanding. It's just, no, here you are. You're in this world and they're talking and you can piece it together as much as is necessary. But for you, it left you a little bit wanting to know more.
Yes, because I grew up with Star Trek and they do develop those relationships between the aliens and people and how that all works. And every episode has some kind of social lesson for us. What I take away from last year is the drug experience and how it can devastate people and populations. Just what's happening now with the opioid epidemic. And that's a hard parallel for this story and reality. If you wanted to get into conspiracy theories, why is this epidemic happening? Is it trying to destroy the United States? Is it a bioweapon?
It certainly is toxic and killing people. Yeah, it's a real challenge here in Seattle. Very visible. So many people on the street who are just like, never really seen that in that same way, where they're just hunched over, completely almost collapsed. I've seen people just drool coming out of their mouths. It's like Walking Dead or something. They're just not present while they're on whatever they're on. That's a whole different thread of conversation, but such a, I really appreciate maybe on Phil K. Dick's part in terms of how damaging some drugs can be.
And he is known for his stories about drugs and that kind of dark side of things, which isn't really popular to read. Now, who wants to read about drug addiction and the horrors of what it can do? And in this case, as confusing as it is with the time travel and everything, I think he did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I think that's one where, again, for me, there's so many interesting ideas in this book. And maybe that's an argument for a serialized version of this, where if it were, let's say, a 7-season show, somebody could really use this as their sort of source material and then develop it. So you could have the development of these different alien sort of races, right? You could really get into the development of this drug and the struggles with addiction. Like, to me, you could almost just leave out some other aspects, like the intergalactic whatever, or all the Molinari, this leader kind of stuff. We haven't even talked about it. My point being, like, just to take the drug. To me, the way I would rework this story is I would go, I'm really interested in the drug as a time travel device. And then I think their relationship, because so much is spent on that, the struggle between Sweet Scent.
Oh, so I think it is a love story.
It certainly comes back to that. I just feel like you could really hone in on that and focus more on the struggle with the kind of addiction and overcoming it and their relationship and how it either resolves or further damages or how do they deal with that. And instead, because I was drawn to Kathy as a character, right? Okay, so she's really beautiful and stuck on this sort of superficial sort of vanity, and she rises in a certain way because of her beauty, and she's really not so kind but clever. And then here's the thing, I think the way Philip K. Dick writes that, she seemed important. We get moments where we're just with her in this story.
Yes.
And because of that, I started to feel some sympathy for her. I found myself hoping they would work things out in the end. And through this drug use, like that it would bring them together in some way, like she would have a, you know, some sort of reconciliation. And
like, you know, a Hallmark story,
like Hallmark-esque, but that because Eric Sweetsen, he just read to me like a bit of an empty character. He's not a very complex character.
Did he act like he had free will in this story? Yeah, I agree with you. The empty character.
But a lot of things happened to him.
It happened to him, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's reacting to,
I guess, if we were arguing, right, if we were arguing for his some sort of character development. So here's a guy where he's got his wife's mercy in some ways. She's been the catalyst for a lot of things in his life. Or we get that backstory where she basically got him into that company, and he's working for Ackerman, and then he's passed along to the general. And so it's happening to him. He's afraid of making choices for the most part. He does the right thing as a doctor. In the end, when's his sort of moment where he makes a choice? He doesn't even make a choice to take the drug. Kathy, and this is why she's so unlikable, but at least she's interesting. Like, she spikes his coffee with his drug because he threatens to call the police on her, which is really an awful thing to do.
Ooh, how?
Yeah. And then I guess where's the moment where he makes a choice? He chooses to risk going 10 years in the future to get an antidote, where he goes into Tijuana, into this kind of the dark underbelly of Tijuana, and he is tempted by all these things. He thinks about committing suicide, and in the end chooses not to, right?
It's nihilist because he feels like, okay, this is going to happen to me. I'm going to go out and greet the Starmen, and this phase of the war, I probably am not going to survive. Okay, so that's it. And I thought, oh, okay, not my favorite way to end a story, but that definitely not his Hallmark.
I'm not a big fan of Hallmark anything.
Come on, it's got its place.
Yeah.
Good Christmas stories.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe that's the search for nostalgia or the past.
Ooh.
There is an overlap there with Hallmark stories and nostalgia. Maybe.
I bet.
Yeah.
Life, Death, Sci-Fi is the first to put Hallmark and Philip K. Dick together.
Yeah, there's something to that.
You heard it first.
Yeah, I read a whole essay about how time travel and Hallmark movies are bosom buddies or something. I don't know. They're strange cousins.
Strange cousins. Yes. Okay.
Anyway, I just found her interesting. I found the other female character really cool. What was her name? Phyllis Ackerman, the great granddaughter. She has early on, she has this kind of a lot of fun banter. She tries to tempt Eric Sweetsen. And I don't know what that says about his character, because it shows us he's committed to his wife, and that's great. But she was an interesting character, and she just disappears. So for me, it's like, all these things, they're introduced and then they're just gone. The same with his wife. Like, she was introduced, she seemed important. She's here a little bit and then there in the end, but she's this institute. And
another main character in the story is Gino Molinari, who seems to be the president of the world. And he's just holding everything together by sheer will. And he's the guy who goes off and sneaks off to the 33 land?
Wash 33.
Oh, yeah, Wash 33. So right. I don't know.
He's an interesting way to explore parallel worlds, and there's all these different versions of the general and which one's real.
That got a little interesting for me. Yeah. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of doppelganger idea, which is the real self. But again, not clear enough or fully explored enough for me. There's some Philip K. Dick fan out there listening that really knows about the author. I know he's had a bunch of divorces. Is he Molinari and there's just like pieces of himself all over the place? Does he feel like sometimes he's an Eric Sweetsen who's like a sweet scent, good in these ways, and yet all these things are happening to him. It's not a very kind portrayal of women. I mean, there's a lot of misogyny in this one and a lot of objectification, which we've gotten into in the past. And it just seemed like maybe Philip K. Dick was purging a lot of feelings in the writing of this one.
Yes. And honestly, it's not his most popular one.
Right.
But I think, like you said, if somebody could pull this novel apart and take bits and pieces and put it into a series, they might be able to do something with it. But I don't know.
It has me thinking a little bit about, it's been so long since I've read it, I wonder if you have, William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch. So this is a kind of Beat Generation writer.
Yeah. And I've heard the title. I'm trying to think.
He was doing a lot of drugs. He says it himself, well documented, with Naked Lunch. It was like a cut up kind of version of the story. So supposedly he wrote things down and cut it up and then rearranged things. And so it has this kind of crazy drug induced schizophrenic feel to it. It's almost like this novel needed to just go even deeper into where she first takes the drug. Let's just be all over the place. This should be like, go all in on its trippy qualities, right? And just have this super
fast forwards.
Yeah.
Really time travel in the future and in the past.
Let's just totally mess with the chronology and the structure and just go all in on this psychedelic kind of vibe. And that would be cool.
I don't know if I loved it that much to spend that much time fixing it. I think I'd rather go off to some other place.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I was going to ask if, like, would you recommend it?
I really hate not recommending things.
Right.
I would recommend this for kind of people like us who are, like, really trying to investigate time travel or speculative fiction. I would recommend that. But to pick up and even on, it's definitely not a holiday read. And it's even on the next level of serious readers who just want to try something. I think you have to be focused on what you're getting into first to read this.
Yeah, I'm not sure what. Yeah, exactly. I think to recommend, what are the reasons for recommending something? And one of them, like you said, is if you're real nerdy, really into speculative fiction or hardcore Philip K. Dick fans there. Otherwise, I'm looking for characters that are either really interesting in their complexity or that really resonate in some way. I don't feel like that was happening for me. Is it really kind of action-packed, page-turner, what's going to happen next sort of plot? Are there some vignettes, descriptions, moments, and or ideas that are novel and will resonate with me for years to come? I think the only thing for me that I'm going to take away for the most part is probably that JJ 180, this little plot device of a drug that could cause time travel. That's interesting, but I doubt I'm going to find myself coming back to Eric Sweetscent 5 years from now.
No. You'll probably say, oh yeah, that's the one with the drug in it. Yeah. And
yeah,
that's important to focus on, but not really my cup of tea. So what lounge are we going to today?
When you're in Tijuana 2000 neon lit alley and approaching a pretty shady window that can produce whatever poison, neurotoxin of your choice in a tiny little paper cup, what you can decide what that might be. Maybe it's just some purified water, which is probably more realistic future. You're paying big bucks for a big Molinari dollars for a little paper cup of purified water.
Fresh water, yeah.
Yeah. What will you be discussing with the, I was going to say something about whoever's in that alleyway, but I don't want to mention all the terribly young people that we didn't even bring that up, but all these weird references to, young, underaged girls in this story.
Oh.
It was bizarre in itself. seems like Jeffrey Epstein would have had a place in this world. I'm sorry. You can edit that out. That's so true, though, right? It's like, come on, what's happening? I would say totally unnecessary moments. Okay, anyway. All right, so let's take a sec. All right. So, okay, time travel. Okay, gone back. And no, you can leave that in there if you want. I don't care. That's all true. Yeah, we didn't dive into it, but there's definitely some moments in this book where I'm just
dark.
Just really, no, I don't need to be thinking about that right now. This is like a little orcs and crakey. No thanks. I don't want to think about this possible part of a future. Not cool.
Yeah.
But okay, so here you are in your riding along with your favorite robot.
Oh,
wonderful AI produced, just the way you like it, banter. And you press the button on your glove compartment and out pops your paper cup with the most delicious purified water with just a hint of natural sparkle, right? That makes your taste buds tingle. So good for you.
It reminds me of riding in a luxury Didi in Beijing with the water bottles just sitting for you in the back seat, and maybe air purifier, maybe some tissues.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Choice of music.
It could be.
What will you be chatting about?
Sip my drink, and I'd be chatting about how I've read about 6 books in 6 weeks. I've gone like reading crazy, and it's been a lot of fun. And right now I'm in the middle, literally in the middle of 2 books, The Children of Time by Adrian Tykautsky. Then another one, the second book of The Clockwork Boys. And this one, the first one is science fiction. The second one is a fantasy story that my wife and I are reading this little series. But in between that time, I read The Quantum Radio, which is a time travel story by A.G. Riddle, and Calico by Lee Goldberg. Wow. And before that, I read Before the Coffee Gets Cold, which is also a time travel story by Toshikazu Kawajuki. I'm thinking about life-death sci-fi and what we could read next. And like I said earlier in this show, a time travel has got me confounded because I love time travel, and now I'm not so much in love with time travel.
Oh no.
I'm looking at the story more than I'm looking at the time travel, and time travel is the thing that kind of moves the story along. And out of all of those books, some were time travel, some were not, I think Before the Coffee Gets Cold is pretty interesting. I think you might like it.
Okay. What can you say that won't spoil it?
First of all, I really liked that it was in Japan. It was in a different country, and it was written by a Japanese author. So it has aspects to it that are different than the speculative fiction that we've been reading that is mostly from the Western world. So this is cool. And it has some really interesting aspects about time travel. And the end surprised me, really. I think that especially after Now Wait for Last Year by Philip K. Dick, Before the Coffee Gets Cold, it's way more gentle. It's way softer. There is a sense that you get while you're reading and after you're reading this story is that it's nice.
Okay.
Something happened, but it's okay. And I think that might be a good place to end our time travel season.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. If I were enjoying a little wonderful taste of fresh spring water in the year 2055 and chatting with my robot companion there, I think I would bring up, and I'm just going to throw these out there because I haven't tried it yet, but I think we decided our next season coming up, we'll have to start thinking about books. We should get that list going. We talked about AI, robots/AI. Uh-huh. And maybe this is not a bad segue. We can cruise along with the robot Uber driver. And I was listening to, I think it was, yeah, Tim Ferriss's like random show kind of podcast. And one of the things that he and his friend, I think it's Kevin something, I can't remember his last name, but Kev, he always calls him. They had a, I don't know, a good 10, 15 minutes where they were talking about things they were starting to explore and AI stuff. And they were looking at some note-taking applications. One of those, or a few of those, they listed off some of them. And what these are able to do now is it works more like your mind works. So you take notes with these. Okay, maybe you're having a discussion, you're out having a coffee with somebody, and afterwards you take some notes on some that came up discussions. And then 5 years later, you're like, oh, what was the name of that book that so-and-so mentioned? And so you can search this AI tool by being like, can't remember the name of the book, but I was having coffee with them at this place. Yeah. And what was that book mm-hmm. that was mentioned? And then it can find it that way for you. So it almost, instead of you going through and labeling and tagging everything, you just put in the stuff where it's, yeah, as long as you're taking some notes after you've had the coffee and whatever it is, the AI note-taking tool is going to be able to find it for you in the way that your mind works, where it's, yeah, what was the name of that thing?
So this is,
you can feed it little bits of information and it can find the notes for you. So I was just thinking, even for a podcast like this, it's, we could almost have some shared, a shared tool or something for Life Dev Sci-Fi, where it's these ideas and things and you log in, or I don't know. It doesn't have to be that. It's just an idea that came to mind. But a great way to, as a reader with these note-taking tools, like it could be a way to organize things where there's a lot of interesting connections that could be found.
It's like a memory energizer that you can use, but you can also use it to find new things too.
One of Elon Musk's sort of subsidiary companies where it's looking at trying to connect the brain to these sort of tools that are you going to end up having a sort of, I don't know if it's like a superhuman or some other kind of thing here where you just, all you have to do is try to think of the thing. And if it's been experienced and loaded, the guy's going to like just give it to you right away. You're not going to have to necessarily use your own mind to think of quick recall of whatever it might be.
Or like the spiders in Children of Time, how they have experiences and they give them to each other. So the offspring are collectively aware of all of the things that the other generations had. You would have that.
Yeah, that's a fascinating read, right? Children of Time.
I am enjoying it.
I checked it out like twice and I kept losing it. And I was like, I originally thought it was the title Time. I thought it had a time traveling quality.
A little bit.
We get passages of time, but you're not really, you're going forward entirely. You're not.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, it covers vast amounts of time in a really interesting way. But I love that book. I got to try a couple. I guess it's got two other ones that are similar in style and exploration. I think each one has a sort of animal. I want to say one of them focuses on octopuses.
Oh.
Yeah, and then there's some other. I think each one has a sort of animal that plays a big role. And so it was so cool what happens with the spiders.
Don't tell me. I'm still with the male female thing and how they're moving to the city of pillars and forming a new group there.
Oh, okay. So you're about a third of the way through it?
Oh, over half, I think. And then the spacemen are in the gray planet, which is really creepy. They haven't left the gray planet yet.
Okay.
So I'm stuck there. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yeah. What happens? Yeah, yeah. No, I'll just say what happens with there's a bit of it skips these periods of time. So I won't spoil it, but there's quite a moment where you're like, whoa, with the humans not long after where you are, that is also super interesting.
The leader who puts himself into the spaceship, he's using the ancient technology and uploaded himself into the spaceship. Now he's immortal. His critics say that's what he wanted to do, but he also says, I'm going to be the savior of humanity and get us out of here by being able to steer the ship. Yeah, that's where I am.
That's right where now. You are. Where he's.
He just did that. He just uploaded himself.
Okay.
And was it a complete upload? We don't know yet, but.
Okay, so you've gotten, then you are the part where he's woken up and there's surprising stuff.
Yeah, our hero guy who has lived such a long time, right? He keeps waking up in these different eras, and that's interesting too.
Yeah, classicist. Yeah, that's a cool idea. Yeah, yeah, that's a fun book. Yeah, definitely recommend. These are the note-taking apps they mentioned. We'll put them in the show notes because I'm going to start playing with at least one of these maybe.
Why don't we start a Life, Death, Sci-Fi note-taking? We can throw our transcripts in there.
Yeah, let's. I like that idea.
We share? Can we share our notes with our audience, or is that too organic?
I don't know. I think that's part of what I was going to say.
It's a first right here at Life, Death, Sci-Fi, sharing AI notes with their audience.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, full transparency. You can see how mad we are. I'd like to play with them a little bit first before we decide on one, but the ones that are mentioned are Notion, Craft, and I had a little note to myself that said to try that one first. That seemed to be the one they were leaning toward. Anyway, Notion, Craft, Obsidian, and then Capacities. And then, yeah, they said Evernote's had some upgrades and things. And I you have to wonder, with all the popularity it once had, or maybe still has, must be playing with this too. Because hearing them talk about it, I'll link to that episode.
I have an Evernote t-shirt. I think we talked about this before. I've been using Evernote for over a decade. And just recently, they doubled the yearly price of this app. And I think the reason why is because AI is all over it now. It's embedded in the program.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I will use it for all you Evernote lovers. I will use it for another year just to see if it's actually worth it. I have so much data in this app right now. I'd hate to lose all that or have to reconstruct it somewhere else.
I think that was the question with... I wonder if Capacity is one of them, because I think one of the issues they had with one of them, I can't remember which one, was can you export everything or not? And I want to say one of them didn't. I think maybe Craft did or something. That's why one of the reasons they liked it. But that would be something to look at, because you don't want to invest all this time. It's like Wix, right? That website, you can create a free Wix website, but I think it's with Wix that it doesn't let you export to, say, WordPress or something else. So you want it to be at least open source or open enough in that way that you can export what you've got and upload it somewhere else.
One of the reasons why I like it is because they do upgrades, they do try new things, but now it's pretty heavily laden. And in order to just to start a note, you have to make 3 or 4 decisions. Just start it. I'm trying to balance that and see whether I like it or not.
One of the things I need to start doing is just a little more, some voice notes that I can upload pretty quickly in some way. I'm curious to see which one of those work with these. Because when I go to type something and I just have so many typos and things like that. So you work me through several things like that. I'm like, oh, shoot, I've mistyped this tag or I've done. Yeah, I don't know. I need a different size keyboard or something. I don't know.
Interesting. I think there are a ton of AI books out there. That'll be interesting because there are a lot of stories that use AI. Does AI have to be artificial intelligence? Does that have to be the main character, the theme of the story? Yeah. Or just part of the story. So that'll be interesting to look at that.
Yeah. Could we start with something like Frankenstein? Is Frankenstein early sci-fi? Is that a sort of monster / robot as a creation of man? Is that the first, one of the earliest sci-fis? A lot of people argue it's one of the earliest sci-fi stories.
Yes. I would say yes, sci-fi, but is it artificial intelligence?
Being
artificial life
created, in the likeness of man, humankind. Yes. So I would say yes. I get what you're saying. As we work up toward artificial intelligence, yeah, is it, are there particular beings or not, or just some kind of universal disembodied knowledge that people have access to or feeding into the feed or whatever?
Oh, is that artificial intelligence?
I don't know.
I just asked ChatGPT if Frankenstein is AI story. And they said, oh, Frankenstein by Mary Shelley is not an AI artificial intelligence story in the modern sense of the term. Written in 1818, predates the concept of AI by many years. However, Frankenstein is often considered a forerunner to science fiction, including themes related to AI.
All right. Thematically, it's definitely there. Yeah, to me,
that would be pretty interesting, wouldn't it? Read that 1818 story and then pick out the future AI themes that fall out.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I think thematically it's a great foundation. It's something to, you know, to have this intertextuality where we can talk about that text in regard to other texts.
Yeah.
Female author, yeah. Centuries ago.
Female author. Yep. I've never read it.
I've never read it either. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seen movie versions. I certainly am familiar with it, but I've never read it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what does this mean? Are we really going to read before the coffee gets cold? I think you would like that story.
Okay. All right. Let me.
And after that, Frankenstein?
I had a little trouble finding it, and I'm going to work on that.
Okay.
We could always.
So if you find it, we'll read it. If you can't find it, then we'll move on to the next one.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah. So I guess I'll see you at the Spaceman's Ball.
That's right. I'll see you at the Space.
And I think we should meet at the Spaceman's Ball in the present, not in the past, not in the future, but during the present.
We'll come back to the present.
Yeah, or we could into it. I'm not sure.
We're going to meet in the future, but it will be the present. Yeah.
When we meet in the Spaceman's Ball. Okay, something like that.
And we'll have talked about it in the past. We'll have made the plan in the past. Yeah. We made the plan in the past to meet in the future in the present. Spaceman's Ball. Yeah.
I just hope you and I are in the same multiverse.
There you go. Yeah, the same parallel universe. Yeah. Yeah. One where we're not being annihilated and addicted to a terrible drug by some alien.
Life, death, sci-fi.